This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 21, Gaming the Game Genome.
Hello and welcome again to yet another edition of Playing Games at Work or GamesAtWork.biz. I keep on doing both of those, but you know, because we're playing and we're at work and it's games and we're talking about .biz. This is Michael Martin. I am so happy to be with you. I'm coming to you from my third floor, I guess, which might be the fourth floor here. Or no, maybe it's the second floor here, I guess. You know, when you're in Europe, the first floor is the ground floor. So zero. So anyway, I'm high atop.
You're high atop?
I'm high atop the building here in my home office, looking out over beautiful trees that are starting to turn different colors. And you heard Michael Rowe, my famous and interstellar podcasting co-host, who's joining me, I'm thinking, from his wonderful, wonderful home office himself.
Deck of Solitude.
But which has panoramic views, I understand.
Yes, yes. So good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome again to gamesplayingworkatbiz.com.
Ding, ding.
100% buzzword compatible show. Yes. This week we're talking about buzzwords. No, just kidding. Yes, so it is a Friday, and boy, do we need a Friday.
Yeah, well, it's good because we're tired, but we have a show, and we've got some exciting things that we want to share with our listening audience.
Woo-hoo!
So we should probably start with what you'd found, Michael, that was something fun for us to play with that I had no clue existed.
Yeah, this is kind of cool. And we'll put, obviously, as always, we'll put it in the show notes, the link to the Games Genome Project, which is actually, it's www.gamegenomeproject, which if people will remember back in the day, right? Back in the day. Gosh, has it been that long? 6-7 years ago? Maybe even longer than that. There was the Music Genome Project, which really looked to try to build a database relating all the different musical styles, artists, etc. together based off of various characteristics. So, for example, the drum beats or the beats per minute in the drum between a jazz recording might also align with the drum beats in a thrash metal band, right? And so you would get these really bizarre relationships that actually allowed you to expand your musical horizons. So you might like Sade, right?
Yeah.
To the jazz. And because of that, and I'm making this relationship up, trying to tie it back. You like Sade, so you might like Warp 11 punk Star Trek music.
That's a stretch.
That's a stretch, but they might have the same beats per minute.
But they have other things too. And right. And actually, Michael, I'd like to make a tiny slight correction. It's not 6 years ago. It's like 12 years ago.
Well, like I said, 6-7 or more.
I didn't stop at six because I just couldn't
remember.
I was looking them up on Wikipedia while you're talking. It's Will Glasser and Tim Westergen.
Yeah.
They joined and we'll forces put that link. John Kraft.
We'll put that link in the show notes, right?
And this is what founded Pandora Media.
Absolutely.
So we will put that link absolutely in the show notes.
So yeah, and I use
I put it there already.
I know we were typing at the same time. So in case people hear the on the show, that's us typing our back channel chat during the recording, where we make sure that we have the links appropriately captured for the show notes. So a little behind the curtain there.
No, don't tell him that.
Oh, yes, no. We know all this stuff by heart, and everything is magically created anyway. So the Game Genome Project looks to try to build the same output. From what I can tell, looking at it, this is tied to Android right now. I hope they expand their view and look across all different gaming platforms, whether it's console, PC, Android, iOS, BlackBerry RIM.
but that'd be really cool because those are all vectors, legitimate ones.
And so the idea is right now they're monitoring 16 different characteristics for the games. Things like device, theme, speed, multiplayer, skills, shooter, currency, etc. And you choose various characteristics and what level or what attributes within those characteristics are important to you. And from that, it pulls up a list of recommended games that you might like to try out. Now, right now, this is tied, like I said, just to a single App Store, and it'll come out in October on the Best Apps Market on Android. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to discover more games and to figure out what you might like. So as we were talking about Pandora and we're talking about BAM, which has nothing to do with Emerald. It's the
marketplace.
For these games on Android. I was thinking, you know, what other what other genome projects could we imagine? Could we imagine like a book genome project?
Yeah, it's called Goodreads.
Yeah. so that you're doing the same thing with vectors there. So what other things could we do with vectors like that? Could we do it with birds?
No.
Could we do it with...
They don't have a genome. They're the...
yeah, because living things have no genome, right?
That's right.
What can you imagine that we would do with other?
Well, I would do something strange, right? So here's an idea. Last year, I think it was, or in the last couple of years, Lego has expired the copyright on the blocks, right? Ah. And so you're starting to see two things happen. One, you're starting to see the Lego company focus much more on kits and, you know, IP around certain types of sets of things instead of, you know, when you and I first got into Legos, it was the blocks, right? You didn't have a lot of different, you know, here is the, you know, the Lord of the Rings Lego set or the Spider-Man Lego set or the International Space Station Lego set. It was, here's a whole slew of blocks, make what you want, right?
Right.
And so now, because of that expiration, they're focusing more on the content, not the kit, not the pieces. And there's a open source group that is starting to build designs for 3D printers to allow you to build connecting blocks so that you can mutate your Lego kits with other building kits. So they can now build those connectors that say, take the Legos and connect them up with an Erector set.
Ooh.
So now the genome of these creations that people will create could be traced back to specific pieces or mutated pieces in the set of ones that are created now, created in 3D printers. And that would be kind of interesting to say, you know, one of the things I did as a kid, my brother and I, we would take the regular blocks and try to build things that we saw on TV shows. Like we had tricorders from Star Trek that we made. And we used Fischer Technik, which was another company that I think eventually merged with Lego. And we would use certain pieces from that as like the memory cards that they would put in the tricorders.
Oh, cool.
Because they had these flat red cards that were probably, you know, 2.5 centimeters square, right? But flat. And then we would build a flat slot inside of our Lego boxes that would be the tricorder. So that kind of, you know, reverse engineering into other things could provide a pretty interesting design that says, okay, I had the race car kit that turned into a Star Trek phaser with the help of this other piece from Fischer-Technik that would be the battery cell.
Ooh, cool.
How's that for a genome?
That could be a very interesting genome. And I just found Fischer-Technik. It looks like they are their own organization still, at least.
I thought they were purchased like 10, 15 years ago.
Well, maybe they were purchased. I don't know their structure, but this is really cool. I had some of their pieces as well. Some of the electronic ones, you know, that you could move things around. Yeah, I had like a forklift or something like that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's a neat way to think about it. I mean, I would imagine that you could use cars, and you could have a car genome project that might help you if you're searching for cars. That, you know, what cars, both used and new, would match the things that are important to you. That could be kind of cool.
Yeah. Matter of fact, Fischer-Technik has a big thing with STEM education now, and that's the link that I passed over to you.
Yeah, I found that one first, and it looked to me like that was a very specialized site for technology, mathematics, engineering kind of education.
Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, maybe?
Leveraging the capabilities of Fischer-Technik, like, you know, others are using Lego or Mindstorm Robotics or, you know, things like that too.
Absolutely. Very cool.
Yeah. So very, very neat. All right. Well, it was a thought. Little game inside the game. Little game we play.
Game in a game. Game.
Like game in a game. So speaking of games and games, I was listening to one of the recent MacBreak weeklies on my commute into work, and Andy Nako had an idea that he expressed, and I was having a very similar idea to this. So giving credit where credit is due, and since he published it first, the notion there was, with all the conversation around Apple Maps and challenges and whatnot around them, Apple is inviting and soliciting, like many map applications do, the ability for users of those applications to make corrections to them and to have those corrections be reflected into the database, which is a nice way of crowdsourcing. And Andy's point was, hey, you know what you could do, what Apple could do, is they could give away a song for any time you correct a problem on their map. They could give you an iTunes song credit. And it got a little glossed over in the conversation on MacBreak Weekly. But to me, this is exactly the kind of game that could be just so valuable to enhancing I don't want to say fledgling, that's not the right word here, but to enhancing a first release of what will be an incredible solution over time. It's struggling in a few ways right now, but this would be a wonderful way to say, maybe even not for every correction that you get, maybe it could be you are entered in a chance to win an album of your choice, or there might be a special couple of songs, you know, limited remixes that are available, that you, when you reach some milestone or threshold, you get it. And then that gets shared with your friends as to what songs have you gotten as a result of helping out in this way. And Maps is just one, you know.
Well, I found it really interesting that this came up, especially given the fact that a lot of the map technology that sits underneath, or the maps, I should say, not the map tech, the maps that sit underneath the iOS new map app are from TomTom and Waze.
And among others.
Yes. As you and I know, we've talked about Waze many, many times, because Waze games the whole idea of map creation in the first place. And so I think the interesting aspect here is that well, there's two things that immediately jump to my mind when I think about this. One is, just because I identify a map correction is it a correct correction, right? Yep. So you also end up having to get into the situation of identifying, and maybe just kind of think back to Waze. I remember early on in Waze when you would draw the streets, right? You start the bulldozer and you would drive somewhere and the street didn't exist and it would build it. And right. It didn't always show up in the map because there wasn't critical mass of people driving over that spot, actually drawing that part of the map, or because, you know, it never got to the appropriate approval level of somebody right. double checking that map correction was accurate and correct. So you would have the ability to do a couple of things, I think. One, who's the first person identified the correction on the map? Maybe there's, you know, some virtual currency or some clip level benefit that occurs there. Maybe it's, you know, an explorer badge, right? And then as more and more people identify, i.e. validate that correction, you would then hit a certain secondary clip level that says, now this is committable as a valid correction to the map. And you could provide the original person benefit X, and then all the people who validated some smaller benefit to get to benefit Y.
A Ponzi scheme of benefits.
Well, no, not a Ponzi scheme, because everybody actually does get benefit. And let's face it, from an Apple perspective, you get two things, right? You get, one, the positive buzz.
Yes.
And the social buzz. The cost of actually improving the map is negligible in the larger scheme of things, right? Now, the other thing that I understand, because I've been trying to do a little bit of reading this week on the map controversy. And matter of fact, Tim Cook just put out an article today or yesterday on the Map Act that I'll link to in the show notes on the fact that, you know, they are disappointed in release one, and there are things that they want to improve, and it will improve and get better over time. But the thing that I found interesting that's come out over the last week or two that most people seem to have forgotten is the original Map app was also developed by Apple.
Yeah.
And right. And the improvements are not in the app, but the improvements are in the search algorithm and the map content themselves. And so I look at this and I wonder if there's not some behind the scenes noise going on, because, you know, I use the TomTom app also on my iPhone, and it works very well. I use Waze on my iPhone, and it works very well. And I've used the new iOS map. Matter of fact, I tested it during the beta period, and it seems to work really well, probably because of my location, right? There's a lot of technical people in this area, probably a lot of people correcting maps, playing that game. So there seems to be multiple areas where there's an opportunity for improvement. And I have read about contests where developers were paid for fixing bugs, and they would game that by generating additional bugs that they could then fix and get paid for. And so when you think about how would you game the cleanup of the map when there are multiple things that need to be cleaned up? One is the maps themselves, right? Two is the search algorithms for finding the best paths, including the fact that you don't want to drive through the ocean to get to Washington, D.C. from Durham.
Unless you have a duck boat.
Unless you have a duck boat. and three, just some of the 3D rendering problems that they've experienced with buildings, right? So one of the really cool features of the new map app is the 3D rendering of certain towns and buildings. And people are discovering that there's drawing issues, right? And so I think those things that can be discovered as obvious bugs,
they're all gameable. I mean, look,
there's different. I'm trying to figure out the right gaming mechanic for each of those three, right? Because there's certain things where, you know, fixing the map is is gameable at one level, but part of it is the fact that, as you pointed out, it's multiple mapping companies' maps being munged together.
Well, it is, but when you think about, you're overlaying Yelp, for example, you know, so as long as we're sticking with the Apple notion, you're overlaying Yelp. So here you have a game within a game, right? So Yelp is where you can describe and you can give ratings and such like you might on TripAdvisor and a variety of other sources. So that's a gameable there too, because there your currency, virtual currency, is reputation and recommendations and ratings that come with that. So you could game that to game into a map, which benefits multiple layers, if you will. And you know, I think there's a good notion around the pictures too. So yes, you can go to the Sears Tower and you can see the Sears Tower in three dimensions and fly around it in your helicopter, and that's really cool. Or you could go to the Eiffel Tower, and the Eiffel Tower is flat on the ground, and you know, there's a nice shadow too, but it's flat and you could fly around it, but it's not 3D because it hadn't been mapped yet. Where some people have been talking about Street View as a missing element here, I could imagine where you could just say, look, we're going to provide some value for, you know, anybody who wants to contribute to these assets. Why don't you take the new panorama camera shooting view and go map a little bit of your streets, right? Go out downtown, map some stuff, submit them, and now that becomes part of the collective mapping whole. That could be another interesting gameable thing too. So you're getting content, whether it's a review of a restaurant, whether it's a picture of a street corner, or whether it's a correction that a street is one way but it's the other direction. So, you know, don't navigate somebody up a one-way street. You know, you could do all those things. And each of those has, I think, a similar game function, wouldn't you?
Oh, I absolutely. And I really like the idea of encouraging uses, new functions in other aspects of the phone.
It's like, right? Geocaching. It's like geocaching. You have the sense of discovery and contribution, and you're using a new function of the phone, and you're essentially saying, okay, everyone is going to be a temporary, you know, momentary employee who's contributing some real value.
Yep.
For a little bit. For a little bit, right?
Just a little bit.
And that's where Andy's idea, again, I thought it was wonderful. You're using a currency of a song, you know, and you might say, well, is this worth a song to me? Is it worth a song? And the answer might be no, or it might be, you know, look, I just managed to earn an album today.
Woohoo!
You know, and that could be a big motivator, right?
Freebird!
Yeah. You know, or it could be apps, right? You get a iTunes store credit.
Yep. Which is, like I said, that's a great idea because the cost is minimal. The value is significant. Again, I think the part that's really going to be nuanced is how do you appropriately game each aspect so that potentially you have a larger game, which is explore the world.
Yes, yes, and you know that, and then you structure it in a way that might give you rewards that are related to it as well.
Right. Matter of fact, if for example you're in Hungary right now,
yes,
that is an example.
That is true.
That is a true statement. Example-y. And if you were to play the game on your U.S.-based iTunes account, you could potentially get additional points because you're outside of your geofence of your traditional usage.
Yeah, maybe.
Matter of fact, it could then tie that in to companies like TripIt or, you know, Kayak or some other commerce site where you could get maybe extra flight miles because you're obviously outside of your zone. Now, if you're constantly outside that zone for a year or two, maybe the benefit's not as great. But I could just see lots of different things that you could do to tweak the algorithm of the game to make it more playable or more exciting or more rewarding to the players.
Yeah. Okay. So I see where you're heading with that now. That makes more sense. One other little ways tidbit that I want to throw in there, because I think this actually adds some additional value here too, and this could be value to any kind of mapping arrangement, is when you think about the time and space placement of Foursquare, and you're saying, okay, I'm checking into this restaurant, or I'm checking into this facility or venue or whatever. You are positioning that with your GPS coordinates. And one of the things that I like about Waze, another thing I like about Waze, so sorry, this is a Waze show again, but, you know, like it, is that you, when you're searching for something, you not only can search Google or Bing or a variety of other or you know, address records that Waze has through their mapping application, but you can also search based on Foursquare. So if you're trying to find, you know, as in the case I was trying to find for the first time, the location of the Hungarian immigration office, you know, that's a little tricky because the street address is a bit off. And in fact, when I used my TomTom device as a secondary navigation unit to the Apple Maps, which we said before is also based on TomTom, and I cross-referenced the two of them, and they're like, okay, yep, they both agree. They're both pointing to the same spot. Yeah, that looks about right. I drove to where both maps were pointing me. It was off. It was off. You know, it was a street address, and it was off. It was even the wrong street. So you know, Waze to the rescue. I managed to, you know, dial it up, managed to get it from a Foursquare point of view, connected up, boom, 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 got where I needed to go. So there's yet another, I think, value proposition right there, is the combination of different assets together provides a better solution. And in my way of thinking, I mean, I'm happy that I'm providing digital breadcrumbs to others that are needing to find the same spot, because when I check into a venue, I'm voting that venue actually exists, and it exists where it exists, you know, and things change. So that's an economic good, if you will, if you want to be an economist for a moment, that is enjoyed by many.
Very cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, that was a little bit of something I wanted to explore with you. I'm glad we had the chance to chat our way through it. And
really, you know, it's sad that our third co-host was unable to make the show this week. Phaedra, we miss you. Hope the little one's doing well. And we will be back again. Next week?
Next week.
Yes. And we'll be at full strength, we hope?
As far as we know.
As far as we know. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening.
And it will be Rocktober.
It will.
And maybe I'll have my own personal Oktoberfest. I need a personal Oktoberfest. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
So Phaedra, we do miss you, and we're glad that we are on and recording here again, and we will be back next week with more stories and fun and games and
feedback from your feedback.
As usually says, you know, we're interested in your feedback. We're interested in things that you find interesting. And you have a veritable plethora of ways of communicating with us.
Ways.
So take advantage of them. We're here.
We're here for you. And don't forget, we'll list a few of them right now, right? Google+, Facebook, Twitter, and our blog. And our own personal Twitter accounts at MichaelRose01
and Carolina Big Blue.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.